Namaste. Last reflection was on the need of spiritual evolution of man. The solution to the various forms of crisis that we face as mental beings in the world. Just a few days back, somebody was telling me, with all goodwill and very nice feeling, when we see disparity in the world of various kinds, that the real problem, whether it be the virus or anything, is because of the big gap between rich and the poor. Well, it's said with a lot of feeling, because, you know, one wants that, you know, there should be no poverty, which is wonderful. But why is there the gap between the rich and the poor? If we go deep into it, we will discover it's because of greed. Why is there greed? If we go deeper into it, we'll discover it's because the ego wants to appropriate things. It is never satisfied. It wants more and more and more. After we have made billions, some people like to give away a little bit as charity. There also they want their name. Bill Gates Charity Foundation. Azim Premji Charity Foundation. All this is very good, but you know, real charity is that half a mango of that old lady where there is no name attached. And it is done not just for human beings, but for the evolution of human beings further, not just to further their condition. Often we understand by charity, giving alms to the poor, distributing blankets, creating a nice school, free education, free hospitals. But that is perpetuating the human condition. That's what in last reflection we were speaking about. The real charity is when we awaken human beings to a greater light, greater possibility, greater truth. And that's where spiritual evolution begins. When we understand that however much we may do, as long as human beings are driven by ego and desire, egoitis and desireitis, as diseases, whatever you may do, you may make communism, socialism, or any kind of mixture, any kind of government, the best human being possible at the helm of affairs, invariably it will one day or the other collapse, because human beings are driven by something. It's like you may train a monkey to live with you in the room, but one day he's going to spoil your things and their order. You may put a snake inside a glass jar and think it's a pet snake, but one day it will come out and bite you, because the snake knows only that. So if human consciousness doesn't change, there is no permanent solution to the world problems. We'll only exchange things. We'll change things on the surface. We'll do denting and painting, not the real thing. So that is why change of consciousness is what is meant by spirituality. So we must be clear what really is this spiritual evolution or spiritualization of the race, as Aurobindo calls it. If man could consent to be spiritualized, it is not just the same as having spiritual experiences by following a certain path and doing certain practices. Because we may say there is nothing new about it. After all, since millenniums, human beings are engaged in some kind of spiritual practices. Now, it is true that there are many who have never understood it as spirituality, but have reduced it to religion. Some others to philosophy. It's understandable. This should be the bare minimum, that we know the difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is lost in its externalities, in a system, in a rigid doctrine, dogmas, exclusivity, ritualistic outer acts, etc., which a person must subscribe. If you belong to a certain religion, God has a certain form, certain aspect, and that's the end of the story. There's no effort at self-evolution. In religion, you have to conform to a certain kind of belief system. And that belief system may be good, but nevertheless, there is no urge to evolve further. But in spirituality, there is an urge to grow further. Now, that's where we have to understand the difference between one type of spiritual evolution, where there is an evolution of the soul from its involution in the animal state to a human state to a more and more godlike state, till it reaches a point where it fuses with the Supreme and is done with life and birth and death. This is one line of spiritual evolution. The Vedanta speaks about it. It's as old as the roots of the Himalayas, because with the Himalayas, yoga was born in modern age. You know, as we know that the Matsyavatar, the story of the previous Pralaya, Himalaya emerges and it's tied, and he goes to one of the lands in the Himalayas, in the ice, and then the whole creation starts again, the previous ice age. So that is, it's not about the only about the soul's evolution. Now, soul's evolution is important. If it is there, lost in the human mental way of thinking, if it is identified with the desired self, is almost asleep, driven helplessly by wherever the desired self or Prakriti is taking it. If it is completely adhin to Prakriti, completely submerged in Prakriti, asanna mrityu, anish, whatever way we want to put it, there is no question of spiritual evolution. So spiritual evolution does start by disengaging the soul from nature. This is the first fundamental step. To know that this is not me. This struggling mass of creature, you know, very often we habitually say, oh, I am guilty, oh, I am good, I am bad, I am such and such, I am angry, I am this. We are identified with that. Worse still, I am this surname, I am this lineage. That is still more gross. But the first thing is to learn to disengage. This is common to all yogas, including this one. Mother speaks about stepping back from the whirl of forces. And then the next is to upgrade the soul. It must turn, instead of being involved with this lower nature, it must turn upward towards something higher and greater, the divine. It should be the need of our life, not because we get some power out of it, not even because we'll get protection, not even because, you know, it'll be good for us, but simply because the soul is drawn and attracted as helplessly as an iron filing is drawn to the magnet. As we know in Savitri, the line, she is the magnet of our difficult ascent. So as a magnet pulls iron, so must our raw soul, which is just emerging out of the complete identification with nature, begins to emerge out. First it becomes a sakshi, and then it begins to turn toward the divine. Now this is the line of evolution which has been carrying on so far. But the problem is, as the soul ascends, I'm speaking of if nirvana is not the goal, but if we take the path of the rishis, then as the soul evolves further, ascends to higher and higher levels of consciousness, it begins to experience this world in a different way. Now, let's take an example. How does it formulate it into words? Let's say somebody has gone to Mansarovar and witnessed a wonderful scenery, and it's not just about the scenery, he can make a video and show, but he's constantly having that aha experiences. You know what, it's wonderful. Now what does that wonderful mean to somebody who has never been? He takes this man on face value, either by faith, because he has trust. He says, if he is saying wonderful, it must be wonderful. Maybe he'll communicate something of that vibration, that something very nice about that place. Or maybe he'll completely discard, oh, this man is exaggerating. What is there about Mansarovar? We have Mansarovar garden nearby. There is a nice garden in Delhi, and you know, nice houses. And he probably is referring to that. Or somebody may even say he's crazy, because nowhere there is a mention about Mansarovar. No scientist has ever discovered Mansarovar. So some crazy people come and talk about Mansarovar and the mythical swans. So all kinds of reactions may come, because depending on our standpoint, we understand it. Now the problem of this man is, who has discovered it, he is unable to communicate what Mansarovar is. Even if he tries to describe, he will still describe it within the limits of the human language. Now this is the first hurdle he will experience. Second, how does he express it, that state in feelings? He is experiencing a wideness beyond measure. So what does he do? He comes back, let us say he's a family person, comes back to the family. Because you don't have to discard anything. Now, the family may want the person to act within a certain frame. You see, it's so difficult to be in that state of consciousness and then act within a certain frame, be identified with that old thing about your surname, your so-called family of birth. All this will drop away. When somebody asks, Aurobindo, strangely I no more feel that kind of attachment to my family of birth, to my parents, etc., as I used to feel earlier. So is it like I am growing insensitive? Aurobindo said, no, it is a release, because family attachments to families of birth are often tamasic in nature. Because we are attached by the physical ego. We are attached simply because we have lived with some people for a number of years. I often in my youth, I used to ask this question. I said, supposing I had some other set of parents, would I still be attached to the same parents? No, I wouldn't even know. Would I still like to spend time? I mean, wonderful parents I had, but still anybody, you know, to each one, one's parents are wonderful. But would one be attached? One gets attached simply because they are the people with whom one has grown up. And one has a certain kind of relation and interchange. But in this new consciousness, when one experiences the wideness, That is what we see when Yajnavalkya is wanting to go into the forest and he says that, well, I want to share my property equally between both his wives, Katyayani and Maitreyi. Katyayani is happy, both are happy with, you know, he is a wonderful rishi and they love him and he loves, they know that here is a genuine person who has loved without attachment and now he wants to go. But Maitreyi questions him. She says, well, I don't want your property. I want that knowledge, that love which is inside you. Where do you get it from? I've been observing you for so long. I want that. My eyes are on that. Then he gives her a beautiful message, which is we all know now, that, you know, one does not love the wife for the sake of the wife, but for the sake of the self. It's a small little story where he reveals the secret of relationship. Now, but when we begin to look at each relationship as a yagna, as a means of purification, as a means of refinement, then it's a very different thing. We are no more living for the ego satisfaction of oneself or of the other, but we must act according to the law of truth. The typical example is, let's take for example the Mahabharata. Now in Mahabharata, Dhritarashtra knows that my children are not doing a good deed, but he's attached. Had he loved them, he would have stopped the Dyut, Krida and the Sabha. Had he loved them, because then he would have done good to them and he would have acted according to the law of truth. Bhishma also doesn't act according to the law of truth, though he is a developed human being. He is attached to his own mental promise. So with everybody, one way or the other, Dronacharya is attached to his own dole that he is getting from the king. Karna is attached to his own misguided sense of being grateful towards his generous friend who has given him a kingdom. So they none of them act according to the law of truth. But we see in the Mahabharata, see Krishna, whenever he has to act, he acts according to the law of truth. He intervenes when it is necessary to intervene. He doesn't suddenly appear in the Kuru Sabha and says, now this is the time, you dare, you touch Draupadi and I am going to destroy all of you. He could have done that. He had that, even physically, that capacity of warrior. But he knew that even Yudhishthira is acted under falsehood, under untruth. And so he doesn't protect them. He tells them to accept the verdict because it will purify you. So when a person begins to live in that state, it is so difficult to adapt outer instrument or life according to that state of consciousness which a human being who is evolving spiritually, when the soul has begun to experience life very differently, to act in the world. And therefore, very often these people go outside the pall of society. There is the society which reverts the spiritual man but doesn't want him too close. You know, Sri Aurobindo takes a dig at it. He says that this is the paradox in India, that we revert the sannyasi and the spiritual man, but we don't want our own child to become a, you know, go along that path. And you know how unconventional this spiritual consciousness can be. Birth of Auroville, there is the whole legend, the Irumbai legend, that there was a saint in the village and since he's childlike nature. So one day the local tribal head, the Raja of the place, he went there and there was a Nartaki who was dancing. Now when she is dancing, one of the Ghungru comes out. So he's a saint, he feels so, he must be feeling so painful and embarrassed. He goes there, he has no such ego that I am a saint, I must sit like a stiff. He goes there, picks up the Ghungru and ties it back to the Nartaki and comes back. But people start raising questions and pointing fingers at him. Now you see the social consciousness. And when he sees that, he is asked, the king says, no, no, we thought you are a saint, but your behavior was very unsaintly, so you leave and go away. So he goes away. But in the bargain, the village is cursed. So it started, famine started developing, and over a period of time, the whole kingdom became ujjad and viran and so barren. So when they went and prayed to him, he says, oh, is it? Then he says, don't worry, after a few hundred years, people from all over the world will come and plough this land. It will become once again fertile. So, you know, that is what probably Auroville is, when people from all over the land came. But look at the unconventional nature. So now that happens because our natural instrument, the mind, life and body, are not ready to adapt to this evolving consciousness. And therefore, some people who saw that there is no parity between this new consciousness and the instrumental nature, they declared that it is impossible. At a mind level, maybe it is possible. At a heart level, already it will start creating social disorder. But still maybe it is possible. At the level of life, impossible. this consciousness and life, they are not at all in parity. And at the level of body, completely impossible, as even the great Swami Vivekananda declared, it's like a dog's tail. You may try to straighten it, it will remain forever, turned. Now the thing is, if this is true, there is no hope of divine life. Then there is not spiritual evolution, but only the soul evolving out of this clay house, breaking it free, as Kabir said, and then it breaks the pot and enters into the state of either nirvana or moksha or whatever else. But this is not what Sri Aurobindo is speaking of as spiritual emergence. He is speaking of a double movement. On one side, the soul being freed from the grip of nature. On the other side, a return from each of the levels of consciousness, the gains it has. It's a way of speaking, ascent, etc. What is meant is that newer and wider horizons. It returns back upon nature, and the mind and heart and life and body start adapting to it. Now, it's not easy. It will initially lead to a kind of confusion. It is like a mudfish, which doesn't know how to breathe in the sea and doesn't know how to breathe on land. But slowly this mudfish is destined to crawl on land and become even one day eventually fly. So this is what we have to understand, that this spiritual evolution, this spiritualization is a double process. On the other one hand, it is a awakening of our soul, or awakening of our nature, of our being to the soul within, of identifying with the soul within. Right now we are identified with the nature. That's where what we call as I. This I must shift and be identified with the soul, so that when we use the word I, it automatically means this I. We don't have to qualify it that Priya Atman, Main Atma Hu, Main Likh Raha Hu. All that is obviously a mentalization of things. But it's an automatic process. Next, it's to discover the higher states of consciousness, the spiritual states of consciousness. But more importantly, and along with that, simultaneously, an adaptation of our mind, new modes of thought, of language, of speech, of understanding, of revelations. It's a new way of knowing. It's a new way of feeling. A state in which all bitterness dissolves and one discovers love behind, where there is only sweetness. Human beings can't imagine that there can be true sweetness. There has to be some bitterness. How can you... we speak of forgiveness. There is no forgiveness in higher state. Forgiveness is to assume a very righteous position, that I am somebody special. You harmed me, but I am forgiving you. But in that state, you see that it's all an unfolding of the divine. So where is the question of who will forgive whom? There is the sense of that oneness. And yet we know the difference is, it's not a blurring of distinction. So the natural instruments, the mind has to adapt to this new state. The mind still can, because it's a little plastic and wide. The heart has to adapt to this new state without losing the orientation. It can't afford to create chaos and disorder in the world and in the society. It has to slowly take this society upward. So he's not, the spiritual man is not supposed to make buddhi bhedam. The human beings who are following the ordinary normal march, they may get completely confused. The life impulses have to change. Instead of that, one has to be as energetic and vigorous, but instead of working for satisfying any egoistic, selfish desire things, one has to turn it towards a service of the divine in countless ways, including when one is taking something which, you know, one may need and it comes to somebody. But the desire must not, the excitement accompanied by it, the sense of the feeling that, oh, I wish I had it, oh, I don't have it, all this must drop away. When something comes, it comes as a gift. When something goes to someone, it should also go with the same state. It's not like a favor done, or you remember I gave this to you. All this should not be there. And when it comes to the body must adapt to it, because it's a very, very tremendous, if we use a human language, which sometime back I was just sharing, it's a tremendous high frequency contact. It's contact with energies which are of a very different order. And the body can break down in the process. That's why the mother speaks of giving the body adequate strength, fitness. There are several ways of doing it, so that ultimately the body also can change. And the sadhana also fluctuates. Sometimes when it is in the body, We may experience states of dullness, we may wake up very tired. The mother speaks of it. She says, since the time my sadhana entered into the body, I started experiencing it, something she had never known in all her life. Because that is the nature of the body. You wake up, you feel dull, because the body is, by nature is inert. And yet you have to persist till finally the whole body changes from layer to layer. So when he speaks of spiritual evolution, it's not just evolution of the soul, but also an evolution of nature. Evolution of nature is not just the upgrading of our inner being from the human to the higher spiritual being, but also the upgrading of the instruments that nature uses for its expression. Right now, the lower nature, but a higher supernature will use, which means a change, a transmutation of the brain, of the heart, of the lungs, kidneys, livers, all the organs, and even the limbs. They all must be transmuted under the pressure of this growing consciousness. That is how they will be, instead of a human species, first many subspecies, where one will be driven by higher and higher states of consciousness, even though, and the body itself will become more and more subtle, but the body substance will begin to change under the pressure. It will feel much more intensely, much more acutely, much more sensitively, and much more widely. It will like universalization of experience. But at the same time, if we go further, one day from within, like a chick comes out of the egg, this growing pressure will begin to show up right in the very body, and the very body cells will undergo a change. Doesn't matter how many hundreds or thousands of years, but eventually when the body also changes, there will appear on earth a new race, the race of supramental beings. That will be the permanent solution to the problems that we face today. And that is what is meant by spiritualization and spiritual emergence, and not what is ordinarily understood, that we pick up any spiritual path, have some nice, wonderful experiences, and well, that is what Sri Aurobindo speaks about as spiritual evolution. No, that is first step. Not spiritual experience, but freeing oneself from the clutch of nature. Spiritual experience is only a little door. It doesn't change consciousness. But an actual freedom from ignorance, which leads to reversal. Yes, that is the first step, but not the last step. We can close with a line from Savitri. To free oneself was but one radiant step. Here, to fulfill himself was God's desire. Thank you.